Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Anyway, so about Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween. We're still going on our trip around the world.
Yes, and this stop is España. Okay, I don't know. It's Spain. It's a Spanish movie. And, okay, so, Rec, first thoughts.
It was good. I kind of dig found footage movies. So, I mean, there's sort of an inherent creepy quality to them. I mean, I thought this one was pretty well done. But the movie itself was kind of a mess as far as, like, what it is. And not in a bad way. It's just it subverts expectations every time you feel like you figure out what's going on, which is great. It also means there were plenty of things that I didn't really understand or follow. And maybe being in a foreign language didn't help that much. But I thought it was an effective horror movie. I wasn't really thrilled to watch the end of it late at night on my iPhone that was just inches away from my face. That was a disconcerting experience for sure. Also, I was interrupted by my oldest one coming into our room. You know, so I had my headphones on. I'm, you know, sort of huddled around this movie so it doesn't cast too much of an ambient light. And then all of a sudden I look up and my daughter's like right there.
Hopefully
scared
not,
the,
not
scared with, the crap out of me.
With a hammer in her hand.
No, but she's, you know, she's got this long hair, and I think she was still asleep or still, like, walking with her eyes closed. Her hair was all draped down over her face like the girl from The Ring. I was like, God damn it, this is not okay right now. So, but, you know, that just demonstrated to me how on edge I was, so that meant the movie was being very effective. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I was happy I saw it. I was happy I didn't know anything about it before I watched it. That was a fun experience.
Well, do you remember the trailer for the movie Quarantine, which is the American version of this movie?
I do not.
Okay. Let me tell you about the trailer for Quarantine. The trailer for Quarantine has, because it's Jennifer Carpenter from Dexter, who is the reporter, and... it shows her doing her reporter things. It shows some scary things. And at the end of it, it shows her getting in the night vision. It shows her getting dragged down the hall and her screaming.
You mean like the very final scene?
Yes. In the trailer, it shows the very final scene of the movie, which
that's great.
It's just such incredible bullshit because it's one of those things that makes the movie scary. Now, this, I don't think this was, if you want to call it a zombie movie, we certainly can. But it turns out that's not exactly, I mean, it's kind of what they had in mind, but, you know, it doesn't.
Well, it was part zombie movie. It was part 28 Days Later. It was part The Raid. It was part, Stigmata, and it was part, Paranormal Activity. It was just like everything mashed into one movie.
Oh yeah. Well, okay, so let me I'll jump around the tiny little bit, but the director, I had read an interview with him, translated to English, thank God, because there's not a lot of stuff about it. I mean, I was trying to, without listening to other podcasts about this movie, which I probably will later if I can find any, but I didn't want to have that taint me, but I wanted specifically to know about what the ending was all about. And as it turns out, okay, so this movie was co-directed. The directors were, And of course, now that I have his name in front of me, I can't pronounce it. His last name is Balaguero. His first name, I think, is Yaume, maybe? Yaume or Jamie? We'll call him Jamie Balaguero. And his co-director is Paco Plaza. And they are good friends, worked really well together. They both directed Wreck and Wreck 2. And then Paco, I think, maybe it was Jamie. One of them directed Wreck 3 and the other directed Wreck 4 separately. So when asked how they arrived at the idea for Wreck, basically the two of them were talking and discussing what they liked and didn't like and what was scary and not scary in horror films. So this is a pretty calculated film. They wanted, you know, they thought of the idea of using like the found footage or like live TV so that it was a single camera, real time. And when they shot it, they actually shot it on a single camera and they shot it chronologically.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The other thing, and when you see the behind the scenes, they didn't build any sets. All of the sets, like the building is actually a building. And the camera is, other than it being attached with like hard wires instead of recording on tape, it's basically just the one single camera on somebody's shoulder, like the new show camera would be. And so it allowed it to be a little bit of shaky cam, but because the cameraman is supposed to be a professional and not an amateur, it doesn't have all those wide, swingy jerkiness just for jerky sake. Like, this movie didn't make me sick like some shaky cam movies do. But they also did what I thought was interesting. They didn't give any of the actors the full script. And the actors did not know, you know, they did not know the end story of their own character. And the major first scene of the movie, well, maybe the second scene, because it's the one that I certainly wasn't expecting, where the firefighter falls down the stairwell.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Oh, yeah. And nobody knew it was coming.
And it doesn't make any sense.
No. And it's not really explained either.
Nope.
Which actually I liked that a lot of the movie wasn't explained. I think the more explanation I search for, the less I'm going to like the movie as a whole. So I'm just going to stop looking. But, like the guy falls and hits the lobby floor, none of the actors were expecting that to happen. So all of the reactions were genuine reactions, which is pretty great.
That is great. Because I had just about the same reaction as they did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. I mean, even watching it, you know, I kind of knew it was coming. I remembered it happening, but I forgot that it's such a stunning scene. It's great. Like, you know, when you see the old lady who clearly has some sort of zombie rage problem going on with her, you kind of expected things to go bad. But yeah, you did not expect someone to fall out of the sky inside a building. But yeah, they had this whole ethic where everything that happened, like if the camera, you know, if the cameraman tripped, they just left the trip in the cut because that made it more realistic. Everybody just kind of carried on because the whole idea was that they were filming this sort of cheesy reality show kind of program called While You Were Sleeping. And the actress that plays the TV presenter, she's actually a TV presenter in Spain.
That's funny. I was wondering why I had never seen her before because I thought she was really good.
She was really good, I thought, yeah. But then, so they, when asked about the person doing the interview, who of course I should name, but I don't have it in front of me, said that, you know, obviously the whole idea, you know, watching the movie, you realize he knew the dynamics of the horror genre, and they asked whether films he had watched that influenced his work. And he said that they used, they watched as many films as they could that used a similar language, like Cannibal Holocaust, which, have you ever seen that?
No.
It's rather unpleasant. I wouldn't even recommend it necessarily. But then of course, Man Bites Dog, which is more interesting. I think that's a French film. or German film, one of the two. And then, of course, the Blair Witch Project. But the thing that really influenced him the most as far as shooting the film was he watched episodes of Cops.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, he suggested, he has, 100 directors that he loves. But, you know, to get it to there, it was very interesting. But this was intended to be a straight-to-DVD movie. Even in Spain. It wasn't until the Americans bought the rights to make Quarantine that it kind of blew up. And it has, I think, an $8 million budget. Is it $800,000 maybe, or $8 million? I can't remember. Ah, damn it. But it made like $80 million. So that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really simple, contained movie. So, I mean, it looks... I'm not sure how to phrase this. It doesn't look cheap, but it certainly looks inexpensive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I put some notes about why I think Wreck is a good movie. One thing is that the location is small. Except for the firehouse and then the ride in the fire truck, this is just one building. And you hardly see anything but the lobby, you know, and a couple of apartments in there, but nothing for very long. And it's smaller still because the fact that when they get in the building and then all of a sudden the building is sealed off, they're in quarantine. The fact that, you know, like plastic sheeting and shadows and lights behind that are really creepy.
And it's never explained. It doesn't seem like it'd be really effective, but it was interesting visually.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, you know, it's I think in the later movies there's a little more to it. But yeah, I mean, if the fact that they're just sealed in and there's police or military outside preventing them from leaving. It's again, a couple of extras and some lights to make shadow against the plastic. And you have a very imposing kind of wall. And I wrote down that, you know, the camera shakiness is at a reasonable level. So that was great. And yeah, and the atmosphere is just super, super fun and super creepy. And it kind of has this fast, slow, fast, slow, fast, slow kind of pace to it. And also I put that the ending is super creepy and I didn't understand it. Even watching it like a third time and then looking online. Like, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Was it just the one girl or is there also a boy in the penthouse?
The boy is in the attic. Yeah. And I had to go back and watch it again. It is a different creature.
Okay. So there is a boy in the attic and then the girl inside the main apartment in the penthouse.
And when she's flipping, when she's flipping through one of the books, she pulls out a picture of a young boy.
Okay.
That maybe the first time I watched the movie, I thought it was just maybe like a baby picture of the girl. But I don't know. Kids that young, you can't tell gender.
It's true.
But it might have been a picture of the boy.
Yeah, well, and I think it explains in part two, because part two starts out right where part one ends and then kind of does a little wraparound because there's a little twist in it. But
Angela is dragged off and that's where the movie starts?
No. It's after Angela is dragged off, but before, at the end of the movie, they replay the dragging off and then there's another scene added to it that explains what happens to her afterwards. I can spoil it for you if you like. You can guess the spoil.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, she is infected, and how she is infected is through kind of like a parasite that crawls out of the girl's mouth and into hers. Cause they run into her at the end of the second movie. But okay. So the first movie and, I guess we can kind of dive into the plot. You have, Angela Vidal played by Manuela Velasco and her cameraman Pablo, they're covering the night shift of one of Barcelona's local fire stations for a documentary series While You're Sleeping.
Let me ask you this. Did you watch this movie in Spanish or did you watch the English dubbing?
Oh, no, I watched it in Spanish. Absolutely. With the subtitles.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can't imagine how they... Was it horrible dubbing?
It was. Although, I watched a little bit of it, and Pablo's voice was hilarious. I think the voice actor for Pablo thought he was in a different movie and thought he was the star of the movie.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah. And people were critical of the Angela character being too screamy. But I thought she was appropriately screamy considering. And
I did too.
And I thought she had she does have a patter of like a presenter, you know. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, and they did a fun job in the beginning of the movie sort of presenting like the boredom that she felt while they were trying to get footage in a fire station, hoping, you know, in the middle of the night, hoping that something happens, but, you know, maybe nothing will.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's a mixed blessing because, you know, they don't wish for disaster, but it would be better for ratings. But then they end up going on a call about a woman trapped in her apartment for reasons they don't know. And it's kind of, you know, the firefighters, Alex and Manu, are kind of explaining that, you know, it's not always fires. You know, sometimes it's just helping people and getting pets out of trees. So they go into the apartment building where there are two police officers also there waiting and a bunch of people in the lobby who are upset. And they go up to this apartment of an old woman and she becomes aggressive and attacks one of the officers, biting his neck rather severely.
Yeah, and this building, you don't get a sense of scale. It looks really big. It looks like there's a really high stairwell. It's, you know, one of the buildings that has a spiral staircase in the middle of it. But later when they're talking about it, it's like a fourplex, maybe? Sixplex, right? There aren't that very many apartments.
Yeah, it's like it has... Yeah, on the second floor, there's two apartments. On the third floor, there's two apartments. Is there a fourth floor or just the penthouse?
I think the fourth floor is the penthouse.
Okay, yeah. So that would be like five units because on the first floor, there's, I think, the office and this textile plant, which is a real thing.
Very weird.
Yeah. So there's not many occupants. And we find out that the penthouse isn't even being occupied. It's owned, but the person there hasn't been there in years. So there's not a ton of people in this building.
Yeah, so I didn't get until later that everybody in the lobby who's ticked off, that's supposed to be the entire residence of the whole building, right?
Yep.
They supposedly got everyone down into the lobby.
Yeah, except for the one Chinese guy and then the lady up in the apartment. Maybe a Colombian girl too. Anyway, yeah, it's
that was a question I had for you. Was who the hell was the Colombian girl?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of people hanging around, so yeah, it was hard to tell what that was all about.
Yeah, I did not follow, where the Colombian girl came from or how they knew she was Colombian.
Yeah, well, so anyway, we have one officer gets bitten, which now you're down to one police officer and then an injured guy. And then you have Alex, who is upstairs, the firefighter, gets thrown over the railings of the staircase and hits that lobby floor and is seriously injured.
This is after, so when the cop is bitten, they rush him downstairs and try and get him out to the fire engine to take him to a hospital. And that's when they find out that they are locked in.
Yes, and the only medical person they have inside there is like an intern, so it's troublesome. And the one remaining police officer sort of takes control and takes orders from the outside and does what he's told. And the people inside are not happy, but they don't know what's going on either, so, you know, they're kind of stuck. And Angela and Pablo, the cameraman and the presenter, they're just trying to record everything, even though nobody wants them recording. Because, you know, yeah, what else are they going to do? Plus, it's interesting. So, but yeah, so now we have injured firefighter, injured policeman, which leaves one firefighter, one policeman left. We've got the old woman. The old woman eventually gets attacks the camera crew and gets shot by the officer, Sergio, which is a pretty effective scene.
Right. Because there's the old woman and the Colombian girl.
Yeah. There's something wrong with the old woman, but, you know, shooting an old woman is pretty serious stuff. So as something to do, this is where it goes fast, and then slow. Everybody goes back down to the lobby, and Angelo starts interviewing people. And that's where they meet a mother, Mary, and her 7-year-old daughter, Jennifer. And Jennifer is sick. She has tonsillitis. And we learn that their dog, Max, is at the vet because he is very sick as well. Dun, dun, dun.
Now, when you found out that the girl was supposed to have tonsillitis, did that make you fear for the safety of the people who are living with our brother?
No, although that is funny. Yeah, he would be a formidable zombie guy, possessed guy, whatever. So then a health inspector comes aboard, and he's wearing a hazmat suit, which, by the way, is never comforting if you're inside covered in blood and don't have a hazmat suit on. And he starts to...
Have I ever told you about my very first field job when I got out of college?
No.
It involved wearing a Tyvek coverall, which is, you know, not quite the whole hazmat suit, but, you know, it's a big, bulky yellow suit that, you know, covers up everything except your face, and you duct tape your wrists and ankles, because I was working on a site up in the interior of Alaska where a prototype nuclear reactor had leaked and had spread some low-level contamination in the soil and groundwater, so we were cleaning it up. It was my first job, so didn't really know what I was doing. And we had to go out in the field one day in Tyvek. And so, it's not easy to get on because you still have to wear all your gear underneath it, you know, steel-toed, extra tough boots, and you know, you gotta have your gloves, and you gotta have room for your hard hat and your face shield and everything. And, so when my site manager told me we had to go out there, you know, I didn't want to get on site and look like a dumbass trying to put my, you know, my suit on for the first time and not being able to do it. So, I got suited up in the office, and it was hard. And I was like, I started to, just drip sweat, just trying to, you know, pull my boot through the Tyvek suit and get everything situated. And I finally did it. And I looked like the Michelin man, you know, and I was huffing and puffing, and my site manager is staring at me. He's like, I hate to tell you this, but as a general rule, we don't go driving around in our Tyvek suits. It makes people nervous.
Yeah, I can only imagine, yeah.
I got really angry because I thought he was fucking with me. I was like, well, too bad. I'm wearing it. He's like, sorry, hey, young child, first day on the job, you are not. I was like, oh. So I didn't have to take it all the way off, but I did have to fold it down enough off my torso that I could sit on it while I was driving.
Would that compromise the integrity of the suit?
Only if I tore it, which I didn't.
Well, excellent. Yeah, no, that would be scary to see a bunch of guys in suits. Anyway, so they take the bitten people into the textile part, and there's a funny little piece of business where Pablo has to climb on a table and record through like a transom window, and bad things happen inside there. And the health inspector explains that they're infected with, and I'm laughing because it is kind of goofy. They're infected with a virus similar to rabies, and the time in which the disease takes effect varies by the person's blood type.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah, none at all.
What makes more sense is in the beginning of the movie It takes a long time to get infected because it builds tension. But at the end of the movie, when you're just shooting for the climax, it happens very quickly.
Super quickly. But we learn that the dog became super violent and attacked other pets. And then the dog was euthanized and traced back to the apartment building. So nobody is coming back from the dead. It's most like everybody is alive. They're just having a very serious illness thing going on.
Well, they are, yeah. I mean, maybe not coming all the way back from the dead, but, I mean, the one dude was thrown down the like two flights of stairs, and when he finally turned into whatever creature is activated by this virus, he was fully ambulatory and seemed fine.
That's true. You're right. And he landed, all appearances was he landed on his head when he hit the lobby floor too. So
yeah, there was a satisfying squishy sound when he hit.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then we have a very Night of the Living Dead moment where there's, you know, we find out that Max was the dog in question, and therefore maybe it's not tonsillitis that Jennifer has. And as her mother's saying, no, it's tonsillitis, Jennifer vomits blood all over her mom and runs upstairs screaming.
I thought she bit her, like bit her nose or something.
Yeah, I thought she bit her too, but the plot summary I'm reading says vomit, and I don't remember Mary's nose being all bloody or anything. I could be wrong. Either way,
it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't. No. So she runs upstairs, and so then Sergio ends up handcuffing Mary to the stairs, and they're all like at this point they're all. It's a little bit. It could be a little bit of Yakety Sax playing in the background if they wanted to, because they're going up the stairs, they're going down the stairs, going up the stairs, they're going down the stairs, and
wait, did I just imagine it, or did you actually just say Sergio like the John Hamm SNL skit?
Oh, I did say Sergio.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, I had a coworker named Sergio, and it made me laugh. Anyway, so Jennifer. The little girl bites Sergio, who has to tell the others to leave because he's now infected. And then Manu and Pablo run outside of the textile part of the thing. And they find the remaining people running upstairs because the infected are trying to break into the main hallway through the warehouse. And they have to basically abandon Mary, who's handcuffed to the stairs because they can't get her free fast enough. And, you know, sorry. And... I failed to mention there's an interesting scene with one of the residents whose name is Cesar, and he is a suave older man.
Very racist.
Yeah, super racist. Does not like the Chinese people that live in the building. Finds them really, really strange.
Doesn't he blame them for the virus because they eat dogs or something? I forget what exactly his logical conclusion was.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was yeah,
something along those lines.
He ends up. They all run into an empty apartment, and it's Cesar. It's the health inspector who has himself been bitten now, and Cesar mentions that there may be another way out through the basement where there's this large drain that's connected to the sewers, but they have to go to the intern's apartment to get those keys. And the intern is the one who's like, is the office for the building. So the health inspector ends up biting Cesar, and then Angela, Manu, and Pablo escape and find their way to Guillaume's apartment, which this summary says is on the fifth floor. I'm not sure I believe that.
No, it was like on the third floor.
I think so, yeah. So anyway, they find the key. Again, it's sort of fast. And they find out that Manu is infected also. And pretty much everybody is infected now, except for Angela and Pablo. And there is a satisfying scene, though, where Manu takes a sledgehammer to a Chinese lady's face, I think. It was fun. So
that was on the way up, right? Because yeah. Manu was he was guarding the door when they were in there searching for the keys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he used the sledgehammer to get through the door. So part of his breaching tools.
Yeah, so this movie is very has like a really video game feel for it. There's like the setup, and then there's a, you know, there's trouble, then there's a bunch of quests to go on to get to the final safe haven, with, you know, in increasing difficulty and tension, and especially this part of the movie, it felt very video gamey. Oh, we can get out through the sewers. Okay, let's go. Well, first we have to go get the key. Let's go find the key. And then, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember, what is it? House of the Dead, Overkill on the Wii.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is, yeah, pretty great. I could play that again. But yeah, it had that whole
feel. I was thinking more Resident Evil 2, but...
Yeah, that too. Both. I didn't have as much time logged into Resident Evil 2, though. And it wasn't quite as immersive because I wasn't holding, like, the Wii mini rifle control setup is pretty satisfying.
It is.
And that's, okay, so this is where we end up at the penthouse. And this is where things go kind of off the rails.
So they leave the caretaker's apartment after they find the keys. Manu's gone. And they find out that he's been infected in record time. And so, yeah, everybody's chasing them up the stairs now. And, yeah, so they end up in the penthouse.
And this is where things, of course, are failing rapidly. The penthouse is just great. I mean, because it's all the nightmare fuel you'll ever need. The walls are covered with newspaper clippings, and
it's from a entirely different kind of movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes, indeed, and that's one of the confusing things about this. I was interested because I wanted to find an interview where they asked him if he knew what the hell was going on, because in the second movie they tried to explain a lot of it in a very strange way, but. The best I can determine is that because it involves this tape recorder where this is the one, you know, one thing that I thought was fairly lame, where they would rewind and fast forward the tape recorder and it always would end up at a very opportune spot. Like it's just push the buttons and make the whirring sound and then click and it's exactly where you need it to be for exposition purposes, and then hit it again and it skips right exactly to the next part of the exposition.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff. Every time they stop, they should have just played the whole damn thing.
You think, yeah. So apparently, the owner of the penthouse was an agent of the Vatican who was charged with researching and isolating an enzyme believed to be the biological cause of demonic possession, which was later confirmed to exist in a young girl named Tristana Medeiros, who was raped by a group of priests.
What?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I kid you not. And the Vatican...
That wasn't in the movie.
Hold on. It gets better. The agent then kidnapped and brought the girl to the penthouse to conduct his research and possibly cure her. During this time, the enzyme mutated and became viral. The agent, having no other options, decided to seal her off, presumably to let her die of starvation.
I do not remember anything about this girl being raped by priests.
Well, I didn't either, but apparently that's explained in the news clippings on the wall.
Oh, well, they're in Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps in Spanish. That was probably the part of the problem. Also, we have this rage virus, zombie virus thing that suddenly becomes demonic possession. Because you have to admit, the penthouse is very very churchy.
Yeah, it's like if the attic, if the Tooth Fairy's attic from Brett Ratner's Red Dragon had a baby with the scary exorcism house from the last movie in VHS, if those two those two places had a baby, it would be this penthouse.
Yes. Oh, that's excellent. absolutely. So they're having problems with the camera, and suddenly the attic door falls open. So what do you do when the attic door falls open? You want to poke your head up into it because nothing bad happens then. But instead, they reach the camera up to record around inside, and we get the most effective jump scare of the movie, where this infected boy swipes at the camera and breaks its light.
This is how I knew the movie was being successful, is because you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
You know something's coming, and it still gets you.
Oh, yeah. No, the camera turns like 340 degrees until it hits the boy, but still, you know, the whole time it's coming. Yeah. And, you know, a combination of the quick visual and the sound and music makes it perfectly effective.
Yeah, I'll admit it. I'll admit it here. I was like so freaked out at this point. And I knew it was going to happen. I actually turned the sound down.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine.
I'd already been scared to death by my daughter.
Like, and then they have to turn the light now is broken, and the power is off in the penthouse. So they have to turn on the night vision to be able to see. And of course the actors can't see. You only the camera itself can see, or if you're looking through the camera, we can see, but Angela can't see anything. And so we get to see the grown-up girl, who, by the way, is played by an actor by the name of Javier Botté. He is 6'6" and skinny as hell. He also played the mother in the movie Mama. He is a creepy, creepy guy, and he gets paid to play creepy, creepy moving people. Like, I don't know if he's an actual contortionist, but all that weird movements and super skinniness, that's all him. With some, effects glued on.
You mean dangly breasts?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and like weird face flaps and stuff. And patchy hair on the head. So right there, I mean, and it is super creepy to see like a super skinny, super tall humanoid. I think that's one of those like things that hits us on a visceral level. That's why some of the alien visitations we've had are from the tall, skinny people.
Yeah, right. It's what, and the tall, thin man. That's sort of the whole, that's the whole deal.
Slender man. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's creepy.
And
it's,
it doesn't help that the girl was holding a hammer.
Oh yeah. No, she's fumbling around holding a hammer with her emaciated, yes, yet pendulous breasts. And you know, bad things are going to happen because of the hammer. Cause we've seen, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, movies like that. So now it becomes really shaky because things are moving around and the camera gets dropped and stuff. And Tristana evidently is blind and emaciated and is searching the penthouse with a hammer. And Angela and Pablo try to escape, but Pablo is attacked and killed by Tristana, which causes him to drop the camera. And then Angela...
I didn't think she was blind. I just thought it was pitch black.
Yeah, I thought so too. And Rec 2 has some interesting things to say about that. And by interesting, I mean it's not as effective a film, I don't think. But, so we had Angela, who is kind of having the Blair Witch Heather moment with the camera, except in night vision. And she's searching for the camera in the dark and hears the screams of... a young Tristana from the tape recorder that's apparently still playing. And as the camera's...
That's funny. You got Blair Witch, but it made me think of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, and then as the camera's recording, all of a sudden Angela gets dragged into the darkness screaming, and that's where the movie stops. Except that, did you find the end music kind of jarring? Like, incongruous?
I don't remember it, so I must not have.
I believe I will insert it here. And actually, maybe it'll be the music that plays at the beginning of the episode, too. Because it's kind of a rockin' little Spanish number. And I don't think it was... I mean, I expected, I don't know, maybe some sort of... even if you're going to go rock and roll, you'll still do a turn, like a heavy metal Ronnie Dio turn on, like, Catholicism or something. But no, this is a straight-up rock song, I think.
Kind of like that aesthetic, because, you know, it's a... It's a great ending.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because all the way up until credits roll, you probably think she's still going to find her way down to that sewer somehow. Because now there's even someone creepier to chase her. And it's a pretty short movie, so I didn't expect it to end so quickly. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of like going out. It's like a fuck yeah moment.
Yeah,
the filmmaker is like, yep. It's like kind of drop the mic.
Oh, okay.
That's right. That's where we're ending. how you like me now?
Yeah, I guess I could see that. And one of the original titles of this movie, 70 Minutes. Because that must have been what the movie first was cut at. I think it ended up being like 85. But yeah, it's... And that works to its advantage. I don't need an extra half an hour of this movie. I was happy with the fast, slow pace. And I, you know me, I like a dark ending. So having no survivor girl does make me happy.
You're not a Game of Thrones watcher, right?
I watched the first season and loved it. And mm-hmm. have the second season, and it just got sidetracked in other things. And I wanted, you know, it's one of those things.
Okay, so yeah. So you know sort of the feel and flavor of the series.
Oh yeah, everybody's gonna die.
Well, yeah, but you know it's sort of a sort of weird medieval Middle Earth kind of setting. But there's an episode, I want to say it's in season 3 maybe. I'm not gonna tell you what happens, so don't worry about that. But there's an episode that ends with something rather shocking. And then when credits roll, it is a straight up rock song. And it's really jarring.
Oh, really?
Because it doesn't fit with the series, but in the moment it works.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, I like those kind of choices. And yeah, I think you hit it on the head. That is kind of, I mean, the whole ending of the movie is really a mic drop ending. Especially since they don't explain yeah. anything. Like in Rec 2, and again, this is going to ruin a little bit. Rec 2 begins with an actual SWAT team going in after the events of Rec 1, like immediately after. So the SWAT team goes in, but we find out that one of the leaders of the SWAT team is not a SWAT guy, but instead is a priest. And they're going to do like a weird exorcism thing going on because this is all religious. But at the same time, Jennifer's dad, who was coming back with the medicine, is coming into the building. And then these three teenagers are actually going through the sewer to get up into the building. And mayhem ensues. So it's a little bit Scooby-Doo.
Why are they trying to get into the building?
I just think because it's sealed off and they're teenagers. There may be a better reason for it, but I don't remember. yeah, all in all, I thought it was plenty fun. It didn't really break any ground, but I thought it accomplished what it was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was just looking at the details. 78 minutes.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's so, yeah, not bad. I could take more movies like that.
It was made for €1.5 million euros, and it made €32.5 million worldwide.
Okay, so I don't know where my numbers came from, but they was wrong. But still, great, good stuff. And the fact that Quarantine, except for the explanation at the end, I think is different. They just took the religious stuff out of there for the most part. But it, up until that, it's just a shot-for-shot remake. And so the directors...
Because people don't like subtitles.
Well, and the directors were like, you know, when they asked, okay, so obviously, you know, we've heard that you were involved in the writing of the American version. And he's like, nope, wasn't involved, wasn't asked, didn't even like the idea. But at least it gave them all of a sudden their little independent film. Because I guess Spain hasn't done a bunch of genre films until relatively recently. So, you know, now there are there's a lot more, you know, films coming out of Spain that are genre films, but.
And there are four of these now, is that right?
Yes. And Angela is in three of them.
Have you seen them all?
I have not. I've seen one and two. I did not see three, which is something of a departure. Apparently it happens before, during, and after the events. But then four, I think, just comes right after two. That's where the different directors kind of chose to part company. So I'm kind of interested in seeing the rest of them.
Yeah, I don't know if I am. I mean, I like the fact that it's not explained. I like the fact that they just kind of they continually subvert expectations. You know, sometimes it feels like a cheat if a movie decides to change the rules halfway through, but it happens so much in this movie. It's just more like they decided there weren't going to be any rules to follow. You know, it makes you think it's a zombie movie, and it's not. It's a virus movie, and it's not. It's a religious movie. It's not. It's actually The Descent. You know, it's like,
yeah. Well, and that's another thing. That's another really good movie too. But
yeah, I'm saying I'm happy they didn't try and explain it, because it's weirder and it's creepier. Yeah, I mean, have you ever seen Paranormal Activity?
Yes, I saw the first one.
Yeah, so, you know, nothing in that movie is really explained. I thought that movie was really too slow overall, but there are some genuine creepy moments in it.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was very slow, and there wasn't much action, although, you know, I thought the finale was interesting. It was certainly shocking, and it's a little bit scary, unnerving.
Yeah, I actually found the creepiest thing in that whole movie is the footage when she slips out of bed and just stands over her husband for like 6 hours.
Oh, yes, I agree.
But yeah, I mean, nothing is really explained. And I gather from just what I've heard that the subsequent movies like try and provide a backstory and explanation for what happened. And I don't know, I'm just not interested.
Yep, I can see that. Yep, I haven't watched any of the other ones, so, I mean, obviously. Yeah, that's why I like films that don't explain too much. You know, I want just enough to, it just doesn't, you know, so you're not just like, you know, fuck you, Stanley Kubrick. but, you know, but I don't want it explained too much in a horror film or a sci-fi film, because the more you explain it, the more you lose your, you know, I've already suspended my disbelief. Don't push it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole introduction in like the last, I don't know, 10 minutes of this weird Vatican angle. I mean, if you were going to explore that, it is not going to make any sense.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact,
if just touching on it is you know, weird, makes you scratch your head. You're just like, what the fuck? But it adds a layer of creepy, and then it doesn't spend too much time on it for you to start asking too many questions.
Yeah, that's what I want in a scary movie. And it just needs to be scary. That's all. And creepy, yeah. Creepy is one level of scariness, and this had plenty of creepy scenes.
Yeah, I'm not even mad at the little kid in the attic who was only there for the jump scare.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and at first I thought Jennifer was the girl in question, who was the one that all the clippings were about, because really,
oh, I still thought that.
No, I was pretty sure at the end that it wasn't, but yeah, only because of the the emaciated, pendulous breast woman. Send your feedback to show@notinacreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.